Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's telephone town hall. My name is Barbara Holt-Streeter. I serve as the partnership officer for Prince George's County Public Schools, and I'm pleased to be on the call tonight with our CEO, Dr. Monica Goldson. Tonight, we're going to discuss our preparations to welcome students back to school for this 2021-2022 academic year. We'll be taking your questions live. If you have a question for Dr. Goldson, please press zero on your phone keypad, and you will be added to the queue. And you may actually start pressing now if you choose to. We'll try to answer as many questions as possible. As we prepare, we have, looking at our town, over 2,000 in attendance already. So we are really excited about our community town hall. Again, my name is Barbara Holt-Streeter, and I'm hosting tonight's telephone town hall with our CEO, Dr. Monica Goldson. Right now, we're dialing out to thousands of people so that they can hear how we are getting ready to reconnect for the upcoming school year. We're going to get started in just a few moments, but for those who are just joining and who would like to ask a question on tonight's event, all you have to do is press zero on your phone keypad. That's zero on your phone keypad, and you will be added to the queue. We are going to try to take as many calls as possible and many questions as possible as well. As we move forward, our numbers are continuing to grow, over 4,000 in attendance, and we are ready to move forward very soon with our introduction of our speakers. Again, my name is Barbara Holt-Streeter. I'll be hosting tonight's telephone town hall with our CEO, Dr. Monica Goldson. We are dialing out, as I mentioned, to thousands of people so they can hear how we're getting ready to reconnect for the upcoming school year, which is only a few weeks away. We will be starting just a moment. For those who are just joining, who would like to ask a question, please press zero on your phone keypad and you'll be added to the queue. And we are ready to move forward. It is my pleasure to welcome our Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Monica Goldson, for our opening remarks. Dr. Goldson?
Thank you, Ms. Holt-Streeter, and many thanks to everyone for joining us tonight. We're about 2 weeks away from the first day of school for the 2021-2022 academic year, and we are ready to reconnect with you. I cannot express enough appreciation for everything that you're doing this summer to prepare our students for the new school year. We are excited to welcome students back into our schools, the safest places to learn, grow, and thrive. Tonight, I have special guests joining me during this town hall to share information and to join me in answering questions. Dr. Mark Fawcett, Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Rudy Saunders, Transportation Director, and Dr. George Askew, Prince George's County Deputy Chief Administrative Officer for Health, Human Services, and Education. We are all here tonight with one goal in mind, and that is to give you the best information available to prepare your child and family for the first day of school on Wednesday, September 8th. With that said, I'll turn the mic back over to Ms. Holt-Streeter.
Thank you so much, Dr. Goldson, for the introduction as well as the intro of our guest speakers for tonight. Thank you for Dr. Fawcett, Dr. Saunders, and Dr. Askew for joining us. Now, parents and community members, we want to hear from you. Let's start, as we typically do, with a brief poll question. We want to know who's on the line. Now, press 1 if you are a Prince George's County Public School parent or guardian. 1, if you are a PGCPS parent or guardian. Press 2, if you are a PGCPS employee. Press 3 for both. And press 4 for neither. As we are looking at our numbers, quite a bit. We have approximately 90% of our poll is from parents and guardians, PGCPS parent or guardians. So we are very happy to have you all a part of today's session for tonight. It looks like we have over 9,400 in attendance for today's Teletown Hall. As I shared earlier, if you have a question at any time, please press zero on your keypad to get in line to be one of our next callers. Now, Dr. Goldston and our panelists, we want to hear from you. Let's start with Dr. Askew. Please share with our attendees what they may need to know, what they do need to know, I will share at this point to best ensure their child's health and safety. Dr. Askew?
Good evening, everyone. It is truly a pleasure to be here. I love opportunities to talk to our Prince George's parents and guardians. And it also affords me the opportunity on a night like tonight to thank Prince George's, to thank you parents, to thank you guardians, to thank you staff and other folks who are involved with our public school system and even some folks who may be on from our private school systems. To thank you for your efforts during this very difficult year and a half, a very challenging year and a half. Thank you for your patience and all you've done to help make us successful in achieving what we've achieved with respect to getting ourselves into a position where we are comfortable and excited about opening schools and giving our children an opportunity to get back together, to see their friends, to learn in person, to interact with their teachers in a safe environment that we're, as I said, very comfortable and excited to welcome them to. I raised two children and put them through the public school system when they were younger, actually in Montgomery County. And I remember the excitement of these days and also some of the anxiousness that accompanied, you know, sending your child off to school. And I know some of you are both excited and anxious. I think the things that we can do and that we have done to make things as safe as possible for our children is to keep pushing the message to, you know, get vaccinated, to get more people vaccinated. You know, this has become a pandemic of the unvaccinated in a sense. A pandemic of the unvaccinated adults. So the more adults that we can get vaccinated, the better off we'll be. And certainly the more of our children who are eligible to be vaccinated, who we get vaccinated, will continue to provide an increasingly safe and safer environment for us all. I was really thrilled with the preparation of our schools and also the leadership and forward thinking of our CEO, Dr. Goldston, who has continued to listen to the science, who's continued to consult us to say, is this where we should go? And to be a leader, not only in the county, but in the state, and I think in the country, when it comes to paying attention to the science and making moves based on that. So being out front and saying, you know what, we're going to have a mask mandate in our schools long before other folks, because other folks were scared to do so. She jumped in there and said, this is what the science is telling us to do. We're going to do that, and we're going to protect our kids right away. And then jumping in there again long before other folks were willing to do so, and even before some folks still haven't done it, and requiring staff and employees to get vaccinated because she understands how important that is and how much that plays into what the science is telling us to do. So again, I'm very excited for this school year. I'm excited for the children. I'm excited for you as parents and guardians. And I'm here to help in any way that I possibly can, as always. So again, welcome back to school. I'm excited for you all, and thank you for having me here tonight.
Thank you so much, Dr. Askew, for your time and just sharing your information. We greatly appreciate that. And back to you, Dr. Goldston. We're excited to hear your next moves forward.
Thank you, Ms. Holstreeter, and thanks again, Dr. Askew. Callers, Dr. Askew will remain on the line to answer any questions health-related that you may have. The Delta variant has caused us to pivot from our original plans for virtual learning. And so earlier today, we sent notification letters to all kindergarten through sixth grade families who applied for the virtual learning program waitlist. I am pleased that we were able to accommodate all families who requested a spot on the waitlist for our elementary program. We will send notification letters for our 7th through 12th grade online campus on Thursday, and we will not be able to accommodate all of the requests for the 7th through 12th program. I do want to remind everyone that this program differs from the K-6 program in a number of ways. First, this is a new specialty program, similar to like our language immersion, career and technology education, but known as CTE, or talented and gifted. Second, it was not designed as a short-term response to the pandemic, since students who are at the age of 12 and older can get vaccinations. And then third, we don't have the staffing capacity to operate a standalone virtual learning program and an in-person instruction on the scale of the K-6 program due to the large number of course offerings that we have at the secondary level. Whether your child is learning in person or at home, we are committed to providing the safest environment possible. Now back to you, Ms. Holtstreeter.
Thank you, Dr. Golson, and we appreciate that overview, particularly as it relates to virtual learning. And so we are now ready to take our first caller, and it is in the area of virtual learning. This is from Ms. Tanisha from the Upper Marlboro area. The subject is virtual learning, and Ms. Tanisha, you may now ask your question.
Thank you so much. My child was recently accepted into the virtual program. He is elementary school age. I was curious if the instruction that he will be receiving will be a dedicated instructor or if the teacher will actually be teaching in the classroom and virtual at the same time. And then in addition to that, if for some reason we are no longer able to proceed with virtual, is there any way that you can try to get your child in class if things aren't going well? And also, how long will they be expected to stay in the virtual program? Will he have an opportunity next semester to be in person should they get vaccinated or if the numbers were to go down?
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Tanisha. Great questions, and you got all of them in, so let me see if I can get them all. There will be a dedicated teacher who will teach solely to the students virtually. So what we learned from last spring from our educators that doing the hybrid model, meaning the teacher teaching to the students in the classroom and virtual, took a lot out of them. So our goal this time was to make sure that we had teachers who taught the students in person and teachers who were dedicated to teach the students virtually. The next question is, how long will students be allowed in this program? So as I stated earlier, this really is just a temporary program until the students under the age of 12 can get the vaccination. Once our students under the age of 12 can get the vaccination and we've taken into account a timely amount of time for them to get it, we will then begin the process of transitioning those students out of the virtual environment back into the classroom experience. And then I think your other question was, will the student be able to, if they're in that virtual experience and find that they're struggling, be able to transition back to the in-person model? Unfortunately, that's going to have to be a school-by-school decision by grade level, because literally we have some classes for in-person that would have already maximized the number of students in that class. So we don't want to exceed that number to ensure that we're continuing to adhere to CDC guidelines around social distancing. So it'll vary, but I would say if that's the case, please reach out to your school so you can talk through what are some options and what are some supports and safety nets we can provide to your child virtually if you find that they're not successful. Thank you for the questions.
Thank you, Dr. Golson and Ms. Tanisha, and that was a great way to open up our segment for Taylor Town Hall for virtual learning. Our next question is from Mr. James from the Akakee area, and this is in reference to enrollment for students. Mr. James, you may ask your question, please.
Good evening, Dr. Golson.
Good evening.
My question is whether or not there will be any additional opportunities to enroll our students who are under the age of 12 in the virtual program at this point, now that numbers are beginning to rise. My wife and I were fairly optimistic, but, you know, we're experiencing a little bit of anxiety as things are changing real time.
Yeah, thank you for that question. We will not be able to accommodate past the timeline that we provided for the wait list for this set of students that we entered in. We are still in the process of managing those schedules and working with our principals to make sure we're able to accommodate the over 12,000 people who already registered. In terms of your uneasiness, I fully understand and I get it. And we tonight are talking about all the provisions that we will continue to make to ensure that our staff and students are safe. And one of those, just two of those, is the universal mask mandate that we continue to implement and the vaccination of staff, along with our building cleanliness, which we will share tonight on this call as well. More importantly, we will, as we always have been, it'll be open and transparent. So if there are any cases in your child's school, you'll be notified. And if your child is around anyone who's had COVID exposure and they've been exposed to COVID, we will let you know as well. Your safety, our staff safety, and your child's safety is of the utmost importance to us during this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Golson. Thank you, Mr. James, for that question. As we prepare for additional questions, please, please press zero, and you may be able to speak to one of our screeners to provide your question. We have over 25,000 in total attendance for this community teletown hall, and this is amazing. Our goal is to share as much as we can to keep you prepared and reconnected as we start the school year. So we are preparing for our next question. And as we do that, we know that we will have questions as it relates to what to wear, and as we have one now. This question is from Ms. Alexandra, and she has a question on the topic of uniform. Ms. Alexandra, you may ask your question.
My question was regarding if we had to wear a uniform.
Hi, Ms. Alexandra. And Alexandra, yes, if your school had uniforms prior to the pandemic, then yes, you will have to wear uniforms when you return to school. If you're in the virtual learning environment, then no, you do not have to wear uniforms. So thank you for that question.
Good question. I guess she's thinking, how do I prepare for the school year, uniforms or no uniforms? That's excellent. As we prepare from virtual learning to the uniforms, as well as enrollment of students, we now want to move forward. We have a question from Sarah from the College Park area, and this is with some of our health and safety protocols. And so this question is in regards to air filtration. So, Ms. Sarah, if you can ask your question, please.
Hi, thank you so much. And Dr. Golson, thank you so much for doing this tonight. My question was, I have a student at Eleanor Roosevelt High School, and I know lots of rooms there, as well as other schools in the county, don't have windows, and I was curious to learn more about what mitigation strategies have been put in place in those classrooms and buildings around the county that don't have windows for good air circulation.
Thank you for that. Dr. Fawcett, who's our Chief Operating Officer, while I can definitely respond to it, I'm going to ask that he chime in and share the response to that question. Dr. Fawcett.
Good evening, Ms. Sarah. How are you doing? This is Dr. Fawcett, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer. The first thing that we've done is that in the spring, we installed over 95,000 MERV 13 filters in all of our buildings, and we actually are on the second set now. So we're installing the second set and finishing that up before students start school. We also purchased over 3,000 air purifiers specifically for classrooms, as you stated. We have some classrooms that do not have windows and, of course, don't directly get fresh air unless through the HVA system. So those are some things that we have done to provide better air filtration in those classrooms that do not have windows.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Dr. Fawcett.
Ms. Holstreeter, did we lose you?
No, I'm right here, Dr. Golson. My question is, this is from India, and this question is in regards to verification of vaccination. India, if you can ask your question, please.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to know if there will be some type of verification or proof of vaccination for the students.
Yes, thank you for that question. Yeah, at this time, we are not requesting verification of vaccination for students. We received direction from the Maryland Health Department around recommendations as it relates to students across the state of Maryland. And at this time, there has not been a decision rendered around students, those who are eligible to receive the vaccination or not. What we do is work with our local health department, and I'm not sure if Dr. Askew has the current percentage, but we look at the percentage of students in Prince George's County that have received the vaccination between the ages of 12 to 19. And I think about 2 weeks ago, I think we were at 54%. Of course, I am sure it has increased since then. Dr. Askew, do you happen to have that percentage with you now?
Yes, we're at about 57% and climbing steadily with respect to the vaccination rate of our children and young adults between 12 and 19. And again, and we're continuing to get out and offer opportunities to get vaccinated. We have mobile vans out visiting schools. We've just been in a conversation with the state, and the state's going to work with us and get more mobile units out. And we're going to have vaccinations available to folks out where you are and where your children are, and as they begin to enter the buildings over the next few weeks. So again, we're very excited about this opportunity, and we're going to continue to be there for you, for those folks who want to get vaccinated, want to get their children vaccinated. And I will encourage everyone to do so. And you know, and down the line, we're going to be ready as soon as the FDA approves for, authorizes vaccines for 5 to 11-year-olds to make sure that we're available to you to get your children vaccinated. And those of you who are young folks who are on the call, you know, we're going to get you vaccinated and hope that you encourage your parents and your guardians to get you vaccinated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Askew, for that information. And the key is vaccination, vaccination, vaccination. We have over 26,000 in attendance on our call tonight. Thank you all so very much for joining us. And if you have a question, please be so kind to press 0, and you will be connected to a few of our screeners that will be able to assist you. Our next call is from Ms. Lisa in Hyattsville, and this question is regards to pre-K students. Ms. Lisa, you may ask your question.
Yes, hello. I just have a question. Why don't pre-K students have the option for virtual schooling? I was told from the online campus via email that it was because it was a limited program and there was not enough space. Now that the online program has been expanded, there's still not an option for pre-K. And in my case, I have two students at a specialty school where one can do virtual, and then the other, the pre-K student, still has to go in person. And we all know the younger students spread germs and, you know, put their hands in their mouths and things. So why is health and safety not a priority for the pre-K students?
Yeah, thanks for that question. First and foremost, health and safety is a priority for every child, whether they're in pre-K all the way up to grade 12. But our pre-K program across the state of Maryland does not necessarily fall under the state regulations because it's not mandatory under state law. In addition, what we found from both last spring and all of last school year, that our pre-K students struggled extremely, I mean, a lot during the virtual learning experience. And so what we promised that we would do to make sure that we didn't continue to lose those students is to have them in our school buildings and monitor them. The state now has made recommendations, as well as the CDC, that in that pre-K classroom, even if one child becomes exposed, we then close the classroom and we begin the quarantine process. And they will continue to receive instruction virtually. Hoping we don't have to do that, but you need not worry. Even if one child has been exposed, we're going to close that classroom and allow students to learn virtually until they've gone through that whole quarantine period. Thank you for that question.
Thank you, Ms. Lisa and Dr. Golson, for that response as well, because it is important to know that all of our children, their safety is our greatest concern. Our next question is from Ms. Yolanda in Temple Hills area, And the subject matter is in reference to protective gear for teachers. Ms. Yolanda, you may ask your question, please.
Good evening. I'd like to know, will students and teachers have the clear barriers for their desktop in the classroom?
Thank you for that question. No, we won't have the clear barriers, but we'll continue to adhere to the CDC guidelines around the 3 feet social distancing. When we entered into the spring semester during hybrid learning, we did not have those screens then. And at that point, CDC had just changed their guidelines from 6 feet to 3 feet, though we hadn't changed ourselves. We are moving to the 3 feet, but we won't have those shields. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, Dr. Golson. So we've had a number of questions as it relates to transportation. And so what we'd like to have, the one question here for Ms. Yolanda, in terms of seating for the bus, and then we'll move from that point. I'll do introduction of Dr. Saunders, and so he'll be able to give some background information on transportation and our protocol. Ms. Yolanda Stanley, your question, please.
Yes, I just wanted to know what are the arrangements for the bus, since some of the kids sit three or two on the bus. You know, how close are they going to be? Are they going to be hand sanitized when they get on, when they get off? You know, I just want to know the procedures of the bus.
Thank you for that question. So each day, all of our buses are going to be treated at the beginning and end of every day to make sure that we have sanitized them to the amount possible. And also between each load of students, as they get on and off the driver, we'll wipe down all of the high contact areas. And what we also plan to do is to make sure that we maintain a constant airflow of fresh air. We're going to crack as many windows as possible to the amount allowable. The temperature outside, obviously, and also crack. There's usually on every bus, there's something at the top of the bus that is a small window we can open to also make sure we keep plenty of fresh air going for the students. All the students will wear masks, as will the staff on the bus if we have a driver and or attendant. All of our buses will be at their normal capacity, which is usually 44 per bus for high school and middle school students. And it can be more for elementary students, up to 50 to 55, depending on the seating capacity. That usually averages about 2 students per seat, in the exception of elementary for the smaller students. In some cases, there could be 3 in the larger seats. We have to maintain that seating capacity in order to get all of the students back to school, as we are back at a full opening. And in order to make sure that we can run on time, and as I'm sure everyone is well aware, we're battling a current driver shortage. So it doesn't really allow us to break that down any further and at the same time provide transportation services for all the students that we need to get to the specialty programs, comprehensive schools, and everywhere else on time each day. For students that do not have a mask on each day, we will have extra masks available on the bus so we can provide them one upon request if they need it in order to get back and forth to school and to make sure that they're in compliance.
Thank you so much, Dr. Saunders. That was great information. I think that's important information for the parents to know and understand the our transportation protocol. I'd like to also, we talked about just very briefly some of our safety protocols and cleaning. So I'd like to have Dr. Fawcett share a little bit more in detail in terms of what this will look like when school actually begins in terms of the cleaning and disinfection and so forth. Dr. Fawcett?
Thank you for this opportunity this evening. Once again, we will continue as we did in the spring, that we will be thorough today with CDC-approved disinfectants. We will also be making sure that we routinely hit all touch points, things like doorknobs, sinks, health rooms, locker rooms, and those things will be disinfected each day. We've also, as you know, we've supplied 400 electrostatic sprayer machines, so each building will be disinfected at the end of every day using our disinfectant machines. We've also developed schedules for our custodians to at least to inspect each restroom at least twice in the morning and twice in the afternoon, and also to close each bathroom at least for a 10 to 15 minute period each day to electrostatic spray those facilities throughout the day. All of our custodians will be routinely walking through the buildings and making sure that they're disinfecting constantly. There are hand sanitizers that have been deployed throughout the building, at least every 10,000 feet inside each hallway. We are making sure we've made sure we've had enough supplies to have soap in every bathroom, to have running and hot water, and any of those type of maintenance things that come about, we have made sure that they're going to be moved to the top of the list, and they will be corrected very quickly.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fawcett. That was great information from air quality to cleaning and disinfection as well. And just to continue to let you all know that
Ms. Holtz-Streeter, we can't hear you.
We're thinking Dr. Fawcett. I had a great story, too, Dr. Goldson. I won't tell it now, but I'm going to continue on. Thank you, Dr. Fawcett, for the information that you shared with us. If callers would like the additional information, they can always visit our webpage on our back-to-school webpage for details and protocols. Now moving forward with another question as it relates to health and safety. Ms. April, and she had a question regarding testing protocol. Ms. April, if you can ask your question, please.
Hi. Thank you so much, and thank you, Dr. Golson, for putting on this event, allowing us an opportunity to speak with you. My question is in regards to the testing protocols that will be in place. In an email that you sent out, there was a health and safety section that stated that there will be strict testing protocols in place. But in that email, I did not see those protocols outlined. And so my question is, one, what are those protocols, and are those protocols for both staff and families? And will there be regular testing, not just, again, not just the staff, but also are we requesting or asking families to do regular testing?
Yes. Thanks for the question around testing. So when we talk about strict guidelines around testing, we're talking about for our staff. So what we're now doing is that all of our staff, I requested all of our staff to be vaccinated and provide proof of that vaccination by this Friday. If they are do not get a vaccination or cannot provide proof, then we will begin the process of testing them weekly, doing a COVID test to make sure that they are safe, that they don't transmit the virus to their home or to your children. We will continue to provide testing for any staff or students and or students that are symptomatic. So if your child is at school the teacher notices that they have symptoms that are similar to COVID, they'll be sent to our care room that is in all of our designated, in all of our schools. The nurse will then be able to administer that test with your permission. You do have to complete a permission slip. We'll be able to complete that test on site and with a rapid test, be able to get responses back, and then with the PCR test, be able to get it back within 16 to 24 hours. Those results will then be provided to you, the parent. Because your child has symptoms, we'll ask you to keep your child at home until we get the results back. And preferably those results will be negative, and then once you get them, then you can return your child back to school. I hope that helped to answer your question around testing.
Thank you, Dr. Goldson. As we move forward, which I think was such a great question, I know everyone was concerned about the vaccination and testing, and our goal is to get as many vaccinated as possible of our staff. We're now moving forward with another topic of virtual learning. This is from Ms. Tiffany from the Bowie area. And she has a question as it relates to virtual learning and her son in charter school. Ms. Tiffany?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Dr. Nelson, for having this time on call. I just had a question regarding the virtual learning in relates to charter school. My son is currently enrolled in a charter school, but I opted him into virtual learning. And I was told from some of the staff at his charter school that there will be no representation in the virtual learning with teachers or anyone at his school. So I just wanted to know exactly when it's time for him to transition back to his charter school once the vaccination is available for students under 12. How would that transition go? Would he be able to just go to school that very next day, or is there a waiting period? I was just kind of confused about that.
Yeah. So for charter schools, we are allowing charter schools to handle their virtual program themselves, because each of them has their own curriculum. So they will make a determination of what that virtual program will look like. In terms of vaccinations, what we are doing for all of the other PGCPS schools is that once we know when the vaccination will be available for students ages 5 to 11, we'll look at that timeline and we'll look to see how close it is to the end of a quarter or semester. We believe it's best to transition students at a time where the quarter is concluded, and so that the schools will have enough time to make provisions for those students re-entering the school building. So we will, just like we're doing tonight, we'll be very open with our parents and community members. Once we know that date, we can begin the process of mapping it out to see what it looks like. What we don't want to do is to allow students that if they get it on Monday, get the vaccination on Monday, to then enter into school on Tuesday, because it may require that they have to get both vaccinations, just like we have done as adults. Not sure if that will be the provision. And, of course, there's a time frame between the first and the second dose in order to be fully vaccinated. So we'll look at all those provisions. I'll continue to talk to Dr. Askew and Dr. Carter from the health department to help guide our decision-making. And we'll be open and transparent with all parents around what decisions we make for our students. Thanks for that question.
Thank you, Dr. Golson, and thank you, Ms. Tiffany, for your question as well. I know that this has come up a few times in terms of the safety protocols of schools. Dr. Askew, can you share a little bit more in terms of the safety of our schools and the importance of that as well, please?
Sure. As I said in the beginning, one of the things that I've been most proud of and most excited about as a public health person is the fact that the school system and Dr. Golson and her team have followed the science and the recommendations of the folks who are our experts, the American Academy of Pediatrics, first of all, who wants, you know, kids back in school and the importance of having kids participate in learning in an in-person setting as much as possible. The mask mandate, and then following that very quickly with making sure that staff and employees are all getting vaccinated, and if not vaccinated, making sure that they're getting tested. So the school's doing it all, and you've heard what's happening with the buses and all of the other things that are being put into place, which are not just formalities. These are things that are really based in science, based in what we think are best practices for creating the most safe and effective environment for our Prince George's children to learn. So again, where I from my perspective, we're right on target, and I'm looking forward to things getting started.
Thank you, Dr. Askew. We greatly appreciate that summary, that the perspective of the health and safety as well. Our next question is from Ms. Janie, and from the Suitland area, and this question is in regards to temperature checks. Ms. Janie, if you can ask your question, please.
Hi, everyone. Thank you all for accepting my question tonight. My question was, is it possible you would do temperature check every morning for each student as they enter into the building? And my second part is, my daughter will be attending a charter school, and I understand that they will not come into my area to pick her up because it's out of the zone. Is there another transportation company that you probably can provide to me so that I will be able to use to get her transported to school?
Yes. First, let me start with the temperature check. So what we will send home to all parents, and we'll remind you all through a robocall and on the website, is for every parent to do a check of their child every morning. Just like you check to make sure that they have their backpack and school supplies, we're going to ask that you also check common symptoms. We do not want them to leave home if they have a temperature, if they're not feeling well, if they have sniffles. We want them to remain at home and under care so that they do not expose other students. In terms of temperature checks, when we began reentry of students in the spring, we did not do temperature checks because after consulting with our local health department, we realized that was not a true indicator of whether students had COVID or not. It's just one of many. So without that questionnaire, without you continuing to ask a variety of questions around COVID, which we will give back to our parents and send to you, you've got to definitely check that, and we will continue to monitor for those same signs when students get to school. In terms of charter school transportation, I recommend that you reach out to the charter school that your child will be attending. Many times there are outside external transportation companies that provide information to those schools and that they can potentially provide to you on how to get your child to your designated charter school. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Dr. Golson. And ma'am, thank you very much for that question as well, Ms. Janie. As we move forward in our next question, Ms. Tanya from the Laura area, and this question is in regards to our computer use, our personal computer versus PGCPS. Ms. Tanya, please.
Yes, hi, this is Tanya Mensa. Thank you. I just wanted to ask, I looked at the school supply list for my kids who both go to PG County Schools, and on some of them it says they need to bring a Chromebook or have a Chromebook as a school supply, and on another one it talked about, for my other daughter, if they had a PG-issued laptop last year, they didn't need to bring it back in the fall, and then it would be swapped out for something different or something new. So my question was, if your child had used their personal Chromebook last year and did not have a PG County issued one, do they have to get a PG issued one, or how does that work for school?
Yes, thank you for that question, Ms. Mensa. We're blessed that in Prince George's County, we are a one-to-one school district, which means for every child, there is a technology device for them to utilize. We strongly encourage students to actually check out and utilize our technology, our Chromebook, or at the earlier grades, in some cases, they have iPads. And the reason for that is because on many of our programs, we have downloaded applications that students can utilize, and we are able to monitor those applications. And then lastly, because they're using a PGCPS device, we also have additional firewalls that you may not have access to, or that even if you've purchased the commercial firewall program, is not as stringent as ours. So I'm grateful for all of the families who allow students to utilize their personal devices when we were not one-to-one. We have utilized federal funds and are now a one-to-one site. So please ask your child, or please take the opportunity to get a PGCPS issued device and utilize that device. And then you can use your personal device when you're home or if you need it as a backup at any time. Thanks for that question.
Thank you, Dr. Golson. Thank you, Ms. Mensa, for that question as well. Our next question is from Mr. Adam in the College Park area, and this question is in regards to the quarantine process and remote or virtual learning. Mr. Adam, you may ask your question, please.
Yeah, thank you. My daughter is the primary school student at Dora Kennedy French Immersion, and we're wondering if there's a confirmed COVID case in her classroom. Does the entire classroom switch to virtual learning? And if so, if the entire classroom has to quarantine for 10 days, and if they switch to virtual learning, and if they do switch to virtual for that 10-day period of quarantine, add in like the countywide virtual program, or is that continuing on with their own French immersion? Thank you.
Yes, great question. So, Mr. Adams, if a child becomes infected in their classroom and is confirmed case of being positive, then everyone who's come in contact with that child, meaning in a Montessori classroom, more than likely they would have been with their other classmates, they were all going to quarantine, as well as the teacher. If the teacher is not ill, then definitely instruction will continue virtually. While students are being quarantined by their teacher. If the teacher becomes ill and is unable to deliver instruction, then we will make sure that those students at least have work to do during that 10-day time period prior to them re-entering into the school environment, and then they can turn that work in when they return. Thank you for that question.
Thank you, Dr. Golson. Thank you, Mr. Adams, for that question as well. Our next question is from Taylor in Oxon Hill area, and question is, it relates to the protocol for lunchtime. Taylor, if you can ask your question, please.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. I just was curious as to what are the precautionary setup plans for the lunch, like for lunchrooms, and how do they plan to do that, especially for the grade school kids. I know the kids like to exchange milks or switch out fruit cups, you know, like just very much shared oriented. I know that the kids weren't in school when things got to that point the year before last. So what do you guys plan to enforce for them? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that question. So when we re-entered students in the spring, our staff did a phenomenal job of reiterating to students, one, the lunch that they were received from the cafeteria was theirs alone, not to be shared, and they continued to promote social distancing. Where possible, meals will be served in classrooms and other spaces, including outdoors. And at the secondary level, we'll continue to have mini shifts for lunch and as well as continuing to promote social distancing as well. We will reiterate to students, it won't be the pickup of meals will not be like it was when we were 2 years ago in the fall where you could go through a cafeteria line and food would be out like a smorgasbord. That no longer exists. Meals are packaged individually and students then pick up that individually packaged meal to partake. I hope that helped to answer your question.
Thank you, Dr. Goldson, and great question, Ms. Taylor, for the lunchtime. As we move forward from lunchtime, there's a question in regards to Ms. Chanel in regards to supporting and assisting children, particularly small children, in hand washing. Ms. Chanel, if you can ask your question, please.
Hi. My question is, I have a 7-year-old daughter, and unfortunately, I missed out on the virtual, and I'm one of the parents that's still concerned, having the anxiety of them returning and the cases going up. But just wondering, is there anything in place that would allow, like, an aid to help the children, like, with hand washing, making sure that they're desanitizing in between after lunch when they come from the bathroom? Like, just some type of enforcement of an aid to kind of help guide the children with cleanliness and as well as helping the teacher in the classroom and in all the other areas of the school, I think.
Yeah, so all of our teachers instituted at the elementary level a specified time frame throughout the day, multiple times throughout the day, where they would stop, take an opportunity for every child to wash their hands. And, in of course, we also have hand sanitizing machines throughout our buildings, and so they reinforce that. For many of our primary students, they also had a designated time where the class would also stop at the restroom. And when they did that, they ensured the students washed their hands, and they talked about cleanliness throughout the day. Not only do we want them to wash their hands, but we also want them to keep their areas sanitized and clean as well. So they use times for students to use napkins to wipe down their desk. And we also have wipes that are utilized throughout the building that can be used in the classroom as well. In terms of additional aids, unfortunately, we won't have an aid for every staff member. We have 10,000 educators throughout our school system, and they are great at what they do, but we will not be able to have 10,000 aids to support those teachers. Thank you for that question.
Thank you, Dr. Goldson. We have over 28,000 in attendance for tonight's Teletown Hall. And if you have a question, please, please press 0. Your question will be placed in a queue and you speak to our screener. And we're trying our best to get through as many questions as possible. We do now have a question from Carl in the Bowie area. And this question is in relation to recess protocol and utilization of lockers. Mr. Carl?
Hi, Dr. Goldston. Thank you for taking my question, and thank you for your leadership. My question was, are the elementary school, the K through 6 students, will they be required to wear masks when they're at recess outdoors? And the high school and middle school students, will they be allowed to use lockers, or are we going to continue with last year's non-lockers?
Yes, thank you. We're going to continue with non-lockers as we did last year. As you know, lockers are literally right on each other. It's difficult to do every other locker because we wouldn't have enough lockers for every child. We're also grateful because we're 101, many of the textbooks that your children would typically be given, they now can access on their computer. And we will
set of textbooks in every classroom in case that child needs to have a hard copy as well. In terms of elementary for recess, we continue to adhere to all guidelines established by the county. So for Prince George's County, there is a order around a mask mandate, and we will continue to adhere to the county's mandate. If the county says it's safe to remove masks when you're outside, then we would do that. When they say that we must keep them on outside, then we have to adhere to those guidelines. Thank you for that question.
Thank you very much, Dr. Golson. As we have looking at our time, we have less than 10 minutes, and so we're again trying to move as quickly as possible. If you do have a question, please press 0, and your question will be placed in our queue as well. Our next call is Kamisha, and this is a question as regards to mask wearing as well as registration, high school registration. And Ms. Kamisha, if you can ask your question.
Hi, yes. Okay, thank you. Hi, thank you so much for answering my question and all that you guys are doing. So I've actually come up with several questions that have gotten answered along the way, so I'm grateful for that. So I'd like to piggyback off the last caller's question in regards to not doing the lockers. So in the wintertime, because everything started in spring last year, what will the kids be able to do with their belongings, such as coats, if they're not able to use their lockers? And then my registration question was in regards to the high school students. If you can re-go over when it will be available for us to register for online classes.
Yes, so lockers, if you have personal items, you'll be able to take those personal items like your coat, your hat, your gloves, et cetera, with you to your classes. We just want to make sure that we try to provide as many opportunities for students to stay 3 feet social distancing as possible. And utilization of those lockers right now is just not feasible. If something changes with the Delta variant and we get some feedback from our health department that says, hey, the numbers are starting to go down or it's now under control, we'll be more than open to looking into issuing lockers, but we won't be able to at this time. And then in terms of registration, the wait list for the program, for, as I shared at the beginning of the call, our 7 through 12 program is like a specialty program. It's not temporary. It is for the entire school year. Students had to have a 2.5 grade point average and have a set number of absences, had no more than 18 absences for the entire school year. We will open up registration just like we do with all of our specialty programs early in the year of 2021 for the next school year. So we will push that information out. Please look out for it. I'm sure we'll have many more town halls before that time frame comes, and we will make sure that our community is aware of when that 7 through 12 virtual program will open again for next school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Golson, and thank you, Ms. Kamisha, that you were able to add a few more questions to what your thoughts were. So thank you very much. And again, if you have any questions, please press 0 so we can try to go through and ask as many questions as possible. Our next question is from Kim in the Largo area, and this question is in regards to the process of picking up children in regards if they experience any COVID-like symptoms. Ms. Kim, your question, please.
Yes, good afternoon and good evening, everyone. I have a two-part question. The first question is, what is the time frame or the protocol if a child displays COVID-like symptoms for the parents to pick the child up? And my second question was with the cloth mask. As we know, some children's environment is not conducive to be safe as far as cleanliness. And so with those cloth masks, we cannot ensure that every child is going to come in every day with a clean mask, the cloth mask. What is the protocol for that?
Thank you. So the time frame for a child, let's say a teacher has noticed that the child has symptoms and immediately contacts the nurse. The nurse comes to get that child. That child goes to the care room. The parent is contacted right then. The student is tested, and the parent is expected to come and pick up their child immediately. Of course, we realize immediately doesn't mean 5 to 10 minutes because that parent might be working in D.C. and the federal government since they'll be open. So, of course, we have to provide time for that parent to get there. But we're expecting that that child will not get back on that school bus to get home. That parent, our guardian, will have to pick them up. In terms of a cloth mask, we do have PPE, protective equipment, and for our staff and our students. So in the event, let's say that a child has on a mask during the school day and even a strap breaks, we will have PPE that that child can use, or if the teacher notices that that mask is really worn, then we'll politely offer them additional PPE that is theirs to keep that will allow them to replace a worn mask with a new one. We have PPE in the spring. We continue to get lots of donations as well as make purchases so that we won't run out of PPE for any student. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Goldson. We are in looking at our wrap up and our time. This will probably be our last question as we prepare for closure for this community teletown hall. This question is from Mr. Miller in the Upper Marlboro area, and the question is regards to the in-person date in the January time frame as it relates to K through 6. Mr. Miller, if you can ask your question, please.
Yes, thank you. This is Jamila. I have two questions, so quickly. Will the return to in-person instruction for those students that are attending virtually, will that date of January 2022 change if the vaccination is not available for K through 6? That's one. My second question is, for students who are already attending in-person instruction and they are sent home because they have contracted the virus and have an adverse reaction, can they be enrolled virtually instead?
Yeah, thanks for both questions. One, will the date change if the vaccination is not available before that time frame ends? Definitely. We're offering the K to 6 virtual option because we don't have access to the vaccination for students grades 5 to 11, ages 5 to 11. So we will have to continue if it's not available. So I'm asking everybody who can pray that they get it soon, that they do, so please. And in terms of whether a child has been exposed, if they were in person and get COVID, we are going to if we have seats, we would have the ability, but right now, we, based on where we are as of today and having accepted over 12,000 K to 6 parents and students into that virtual program, we don't have any additional available seats at the virtual learning component at this time. We have stretched ourselves extremely thin to accommodate that request thus far. So thanks for both of those questions.
Thank you so very much. And thank you, Dr. Goldson. Wow, this has been a very enlightening and informative teletown hall. There were so many great questions. We unfortunately did not have enough time to go through all those questions with almost 30,000 in attendance. But thank you for all your callers and the panelists for tonight. As we shared earlier, please visit our website for more information in terms of our back to school and as we reconnect over the next couple of weeks. Dr. Goldson, do you have any final remarks?
Yes, thank you so much. I just want to thank all of our parents for joining us this evening and taking an hour out of their time just to be on the line to hear our information, or if you had an opportunity to ask a question. As always, we'll continue to do what we can to keep you informed and know that our student and our staff's health and safety is our priority. Be patient with us on the first day of school. It's hard to believe, but we didn't have a first day of school last year like we're going to have this year. So I do expect that there'll be a few bumps in the road, but like anything, when we come together as a community, professional and community that we live in, we're able to overcome any obstacles that come our way. Thank you for all you do and for being our partner. Have a great evening.
Good night.